Meow.
Meow.
This is the Warrant Canary coming at you live from Keene in the Shire. Hello, freedom fiends. Waterboarding you with liberty while calming the hamster in your brain.
We're waterboarding the hamster in your brain.
Hey, does bad philosophy got you down? The freedom fiends have the solution tonight. Regular host Michael Dean can't be with us tonight. Davi, what's he up to?
Well, you know, it's interesting you should say that. I got the carrier pigeon just this hour. It seems that, you know, Fiend in Chief has been kidnapped by mole men and is being held ransom for 100 pounds of state cheese.
No! Where now, are we going to get that much
cheese? It doesn't seem like the government has actually produced state cheese since, like, World War One, but it does happen that Gouda is the state cheese of Wisconsin. And what? So we're hoping that that technicality will have our Fiend in Chief back shortly. So we've sent a battalion of carrier pigeons off to Wisconsin, and hopefully we'll have that state cheese in hand shortly.
Well, I hope that all that works out. Poor Michael, he must be worried. And you know, I mentioned bad philosophy having people down. That's been going around a little bit. There's a cold.
It's a foo epidemic.
Yeah, it's a foo. I'm feeling a little foo myself. So. What's that all about? What's the bad philosophy, Davi?
Well, foo, for those that don't know, stands for family of origin, and it's sort of famous for the phrase defoo, which means to break ties with your family of origin, which is what Stefan Molyneux is perhaps most controversially known for.
Now, is that bad philosophy in your opinion?
No, you know, I think there is a time and a place to break with abusive people. Although the particular scandal going on this week has to do with intellectual property, not with defooing.
Right.
And
although there is some defooing that's a part of it, so it's important to introduce that and get it out of the way. So, you know, what's the scandal?
Well, it seems that there are, you know, allegations on both sides, but it seems that Stefan Molyneux and his business manager sent YouTube some takedown intellectual property, sort of takedown notices for some channels that were critical of him. And those channels were suspended, although quickly mirrored, because, you know, censorship is just damage and the internet roots around it. But so the accusation is that these channels were threatening or doxing, which means publishing personal information from his callers. Mm-hmm. Although the sort of surface, at least all that is known from the evidence presented, is that they were taking excerpts of his show where he was saying crazy things and sort of making him look a little foolish.
So it seems like he told a lie, which was that I've made these takedown notices to YouTube because there's bullying going on, not necessarily because it was a copyright infringement, because he's not.
Even if that's true, even if the bullying occurred, it's still a lie, because he told YouTube it was a copyright infringement when he's been very clear that he doesn't believe in intellectual property and people are free to use his videos however they see fit. Okay. So that is a lie either way. Whether or not the bullying actually occurred is it's an interesting question. Whether or not bullying is an app violation or a violation of the non-aggression principle is interesting as well, since that is sort of the bailiwick of his philosophy show. Yeah, I don't know. There's lots of avenues we could go here. I'd kind of like to talk about what could have been done rather than sending a takedown notice. But,
before we do, I think one other thing that's important to get out of the way is that Stefan recently took on a partner, an assistant, within the last year, maybe a year ago, within that realm.
And this assistant is his name?
Yes. And this assistant mm-hmm. has been his right-hand man, a decision maker in a lot of ways, and he shares responsibility for these takedown notices. It seems that he was the one who ultimately pulled the trigger on these, and it was his idea.
It's fine to say they share responsibility. I don't think that Stefan Molyneux gets to dodge responsibility because it was a business manager, though.
Yeah, totally. Fair. He makes the ultimate decision. But I think it's also worth mentioning, because I'm skeptical that this whole thing would have happened had Stefan just been on his own. Part of that would be that he wouldn't have enough time, you know, producing all these videos to go around and do takedown notices on other people. But also that it doesn't jive with his personality, his philosophy.
Well, it doesn't jive with his it's either David or Michael DeMarco. I don't remember. Michael. So I'm just going to call him DeMarco.
Michael.
Okay. It doesn't jive with his philosophy either. I mean, Stefan Molyneux was very careful in who he hired, you know, and he hired somebody from within his community, and his community is kind of rigid in its standard of what people sort of philosophically will put up with. And, you know,
bring their own baggage, their own like emotional reactions to things like bullying, and he may have been a victim of internet bullying himself. In the past. I'm totally speculating at this point.
Well, you know, Stefan Molyneux hasn't walked that back at all. Anyway, he hasn't sort of moved away from the decision. He defended the decision when he was on the Joe Rogan show and sort of said that this was about defending his audience. And what's interesting about that is, it's sort of like the way it's phrased is, you know, we used whatever tool was at our disposal to protect our audience. But he didn't really like demonstrate that there was a threat made. And in fact, there's a challenge now that all the videos are mirrored. There are somebody who's put up some amount of money to find a threat in any of the videos.
Wow.
And I think that'll kind of pan out in an interesting way.
Oh, my gosh. Well, that really does. That inspires him to put all the facts on the table. If he hasn't been forthcoming so far, now he's really going to have to be.
And see, this is what's really interesting, because for me personally, the most influential and the most sort of mind-blowing thing Stefan Molyneux has done and the thing that he talks about is his DRO model, or his dispute resolution organization idea of how you can solve courts and laws and police and these things in a free market way without resorting to aggression. And he always talks about how a dispute resolution organization will get their facts straight and in the record before they take any action against a person, because their reputation is on the line. And so the question is, he's in settling this dispute, does he have all of his evidence and his facts, all his ducks in a row?
No. Certainly no, doesn't look that way.
It doesn't look that way.
Now, once that's decided, once that's known, how does one backpedal from that and hold one's head high and keep credibility? I mean, isn't he going to suffer some irreparable damage from having his reputation tarnished at this point?
I'm like sure.
He's very popular. Stefan Molyneux, I should mention, it was one of the huge influences in my journey towards freedom.
Mine too.
Because Absolutely. Of his consistent videos presenting the philosophy of, you know, self-ownership and examples of how life would work in a libertarian paradise, like what you brought up, the dispute resolution organization.
His speech at the Liberty Forum in, I think, 2007, the Against Me argument, was the moment that I went from a political libertarian to a voluntarist.
Yeah, and he has a good way of making arguments personal, like bringing them to the next level. It's one thing to support the ideas of freedom, but then it's a whole other to start to live your life differently based on those things, you know, like the relationships that you have, being honest.
And he's right about that. He's totally right about that.
Right about what?
That your principles can't just be the things that you post on Facebook. Your principles have to be the things that influence the way that you live your life.
Yeah.
One of a quote from him that I'm actually really fond of is, if you want to change the world, you have to root your principles so deeply in the ground that you force the world to rotate around you.
Yeah, I always liked that phrase too. Well, how's he doing with that
how's
goal?
He doing?
Yeah, with that goal. I mean, he's gotten a lot of attention from Anna Kasparian, from the Young Turks. She's been making videos about Stefan.
Yeah.
Joe Rogan's podcast, he's been on 3 times, I think, now, which has a huge audience, maybe in the millions.
Mm-hmm. And he had some. So he was on Adam versus the Man, and he was on. What am I thinking of this other one?
Breaking the Set with Abby Martin. He's on a lot, which is a popular RT
I'm thinking
show.
Peter Schiff.
Yep, he's
an InfoWars
show a lot.
So yeah, he has a huge reach as a personality, as like a one man sort of guest host. He has a huge reach, and you know, the publicity of this may turn out better for him in the long run. Who knows? But a lot of people who have been defending him through some of his crazier statements over the last year have sort of decided that this is the straw that breaks the camel's back.
But I want this to be a teaching moment. Like, this is a so many people want to see a hero fall, like those Superman is Dead stories sold out. You know, they were the big seller of the 90s. So people want to see a hero fall. I think that was even one of the themes of one of the Spider-Man movies.
Yeah, and, you know, that isn't what I want.
Well, I don't want that either. And I see sort of a, I don't know if it's jealousy or what sort of inspires this type of thinking, but I see people licking their lips and just so happy that Stefan seems to be crumbling under this pressure.
You know what
that he
it
seems
is?
To be lying. What?
And this is a bad analogy because I'm going to be comparing Stefan Molyneux to the LAPD.
Oh.
And I realize how strange that is. But, you know, before cameras, people would report police brutality in L.A. And there was a culture of this. People knew there was a problem with the LAPD. The LAPD had statements in their mission statements about the need for intimidation. But when an incident would occur, people would report it. And it was the police officer's word against the civilian. And the courts or whoever was taking the report would take the police aside. And so there was this growing tension of people who didn't feel like their grievance was even being considered. And then when the Rodney King video happened, it's like, no, there's evidence now. It's right there. You can point to it. You can look at it. And a lot of that outrage was about previous police brutality, not necessarily about that police brutality. And that was a boiling point, if that makes sense.
Sure. So you think there's a boiling point for a lot of Stefan Molyneux's
right.
philosophical listeners?
Right. This is the
Rodney
King video of people's grievances against Stefan Molyneux.
So what are their main grievances? That he lies? That
no,
he
you know,
uses
honestly,
the state or uses copyright against people?
No, I don't think that's... I don't even really think that's what's motivating
what's
most of the
issue?
People's... So the big one is defooing. It's there are people who don't like his position on breaking ties with family, and that's a sacred cow for them. There are people who don't like a lot of the statements that he's made about women and about women's sort of role in the state or role in the family or sort of just the corrupting influence of women. He says a lot of things about women.
He does focus on women, and he explains that being that society focuses already a lot on men. Like, yeah, both men and women have a lot of work to do if we're going to have a free society. But men seem to already be focusing on that. Like, people hear men shouldn't hit their wives. Men should learn not to rape women. You know, there's a lot of focus on what men can do to improve. There's not so much of a focus on what women can do to improve.
Yeah. And then finally, his atheism, I think, confronts a lot of people.
Well, we're going to solve these problems in the next segment.
Oh, okay.
We're going to resolve everything for everyone. Fiends.
Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
You know, I think I'm more of a bass cat and you're more of a lead cat.
Okay, I can take that. I'm the warrant canary. Who are you?
I am the shiny badger.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That sounds nice. You know, a warrant canary is, I'm sure you already know this, but for those who don't know, is a helpful warning on a website that lets you know that the website administrators have not been contacted by the feds to reveal the personal information of their users. But when that thing disappears... Well, you can figure the rest out. They've probably been contacted by the feds to release information about their users. So
yeah.
I am like a warrant canary in that I'm giving a warning to the people and I'm singing. So that's
there
it.
You go.
That's it. And
speaking
you're the
of contact,
backer.
We have a follow-up carrier pigeon from Michael.
Oh, thank goodness. Is he okay?
He's okay. Here's the thing, though. Canada rescued him out from under us. We were just about to get our state cheese off to the mole people, and it turns out that Stefan Molyneux actually provided state cheese from Canada, and so Michael has been whisked away to Canada, and he is now in Stefan Molyneux's windowless bunker drinking whiskey and smoking crack, and he's perfectly safe. So crisis averted, state cheese delivered, and I'm sure they have plenty to talk about.
Yeah, I'm sure. Did Tom Ford do any of the delivery on that that government cheese, the mayor of Toronto, crack smoking mayor?
Maybe. I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
Part of the problem is there's no Wi-Fi signal anywhere in Canada, so we can't really get him live on the air right now. But
well, at least we've got those carrier pigeons. Maybe we can get another update.
You know, sending out internet packets via carrier pigeon is very time consuming.
Yeah. They never translate it right. So you know? When did all this? We were talking about Stefan Molyneux earlier and how he's in a bit of hot water from his fans holding mm-hmm. his feet to the fire and saying, hey, you lied, or stuff is misleading, or you're not following your principles. George Donnelly, an activist who used to run an activist insurance plan.
Oh, he still does. I'm a member.
Oh, okay,
you're talking,
cool.
Mutual Shield.
Yeah, Shield Mutual.
It's a Shield Mutual.
Yeah, I was a member too, or am a member. I'm unclear as to whether or not that's still in operation. But yeah, he produced a great video calling out Stefan in a really polite and friendly, encouraging way. But how did all this begin? Like, how did this, get dug up? Do you have any idea?
Well, I don't know. I guess you have True Shibes, which was this channel, or Sheebs maybe, which was this channel that sort of pulled out the wackier statements Molyneux makes and sort of puts them in their own separate videos so that when people are criticizing him or want to make comments about him, they don't have to sift through all 3 hours of his show. They
this
can
is really
say,
helpful
here's
service.
I thought so, too. And, you know, like, even as a fan of Molyneux, I don't know, I can take a joke.
Yeah. So, and you know what it's like as a consumer of podcasts and Liberty videos that Stefan produces. They can be 3 hours long sometimes. You just can't find a piece of media that you're looking for unless someone does the hard work of chopping those things up and presenting it. So thanks,
sure.
True Shibes.
And so as I understand it, I don't know when this happened exactly, but it seems to have blown up maybe a week ago. He asked YouTube to take down their channel, along with one other channel I don't recall the name of, for copyright violation. Now, the interesting thing about this is some people have argued that this is not invoking the law. This is not invoking the state because he's sending this letter to YouTube, and YouTube is a private agency. But here's the thing. YouTube is being extra what am I trying to say?
YouTube
litigious.
Is, oh, okay.
Because they exist in a regime of intellectual property.
Ah.
So even though it is a private company, it's still Molyneux banking on the litigiousness of the system because of an illegitimate legal framework.
Wow.
And that's not a get out of jail free card for me.
No, wait a minute. Isn't that tantamount to someone saying, my house has been robbed and now I'm going to call the police, and people saying, well, you're not philosophically consistent because you're calling the state.
Because robbery is a real crime.
But this isn't?
No, this is not a real crime.
What is this? What are we talking about here? Is this bullying?
Producing YouTube videos? What he alleges, and what I haven't seen any evidence of, is that people were tracking down the people who called his show, listeners and callers into his show, and then posting their personal information online as a way of intimidating people into not calling into his show.
But this has been asserted without evidence, right?
Exactly.
And his list of callers goes into November, he's explained on the Joe Rogan show. So it's not like he's short of listeners, and this has been a particularly effective method of getting people to not call in.
Right. Also, that's not an act of aggression.
So it's not passing the smell test here. I'd like to learn more.
Well, we'll have to get back to it after this trip to the market.
Let's do that.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges. This is Davi Barker from ShinyBadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at ShinyBadges.com, write WORMS in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
Hey, we got another carrier pigeon here. Just flew into Keene, New Hampshire.
Awesome. Oh, what does it say?
This one's from Ian Freeman. He says it's baloney that Stefan is taking responsibility for what people are doing with the clips after his listeners call in. What does he mean by that?
You mean like protecting his listeners?
I guess so. I guess that's what he means. I can't really make out the message. It's written in pigeon.
So it was translated into pigeon and then translated back into English?
Yeah, by me. So, you know, I'm doing my best. But
my pigeon's not very good either.
So what does this mean?
I guess what I take from that is that it's not the host's job to protect the identity of the callers. Callers kind of, they call into a show, they know it's in public, and they can give their real name or their fake name or whatever. And, you know, I guess is it a violation? And I'm arguing that it is not. It's not aggression. It's not a real crime.
So, okay, Stefan Molyneux is a philosopher who's been producing YouTube videos for like 8 years. He's hit sort of peak level fame right now, and hopefully he'll just keep on coasting up because I'm a big fan.
Yeah, but I hope he comes back.
But he's done something questionable, morally ambiguous, or outright wrong. And I want to see this be a teaching moment. Like we both sort of agreed.
Yeah,
he has an opportunity to step up here and show philosophy in practice, and give a good example.
Let's just speculate. If this were in LibPair, and you know YouTube wasn't so litigious because the IP regime didn't exist, what could Molyneux do if he wanted to protect the identity of his listeners?
He could give a stern warning to listeners not to reveal certain information. Maybe do a screening process, like help. You know, find out personal info before the call starts, something like that.
So. You know what occurs to me, and this is sort of like every sort of Dr. Frazier, Dr. Laura show I've ever heard in my life, is they don't use people's names. They say, depressed in Detroit, you're on the air. You know what I mean? They don't even use people's names.
Yeah, using names can be helpful, like, for connecting. You know, so I can say like, oh, Davi, I really feel you on that when you talk about your childhood, but, it doesn't work the same. It's like, oh, depressed in Detroit. So maybe he just wants to use names, but even for that, he could just make up names. All guys could be Jack.
Yeah. So let's say it was too late. Let's say, there was somebody bullying one of his listeners and there was a YouTube channel that was hosting the personal information of the listeners. It seems like he could just write a letter to YouTube and say, hey, this is sort of nasty. Do you guys mind taking this down just, you know, as a personal request? And YouTube might respond. Or he could have written a letter to the owner of the channel and said, like, hey, guys, this isn't cool.
I think he should let Anonymous know. The problem would be solved pretty quickly if the person were really
vigilante hackers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, Anonymous, I do a philosophy show where I try and help people. And then there's this guy who's revealing all their personal info and trying to bully them. What could you do about it? And I'm bet Anonymous would get on it pretty quick.
Yeah, maybe. Like, that's an interesting idea.
Yeah, because they're perfect. They're great at pulling up people's information. Two can play at that game.
That's true. And, you know, it's also like in the framework of the sort of natural law tradition, once you do something, you sort of de facto have it accept it being done to you, right?
Yes. So it would be that's the ultimate justice.
Yeah, right. So yeah, revealing the personal information of the not aggressor but the troll, let's say.
The troll.
And you know that's already worked in the Bitcoin space where like Bitcoin was stolen and all it took was threatening to release the personal information of the thief and people returned stuff.
Wow. Well, so personal accountability, like personal responsibility is the incentive that people need to be honest. Is that Is that the philosophical point that's being made here?
I bet it would solve a lot. I bet it would solve a lot of these sorts of conflicts for sure.
Yeah, because part of it, what I saw from the Joe Rogan podcast is Stefan did sort of backpedal on the personal responsibility aspect of this takedown by bringing up that Mike had done it. That was one of the excuses that I was sort of clinging to, as like, well, my hero couldn't have possibly gone against his principles and used a YouTube takedown notice, so it must have been this other guy, this new guy.
I think they work so closely together that decisions like this aren't made without being co-signed.
Yeah, so is his fame so big that his fans aren't holding him personally responsible? I know, like, sometimes when you're surrounded by an echo chamber, it can be hard to keep a check on yourself, because no one wants to be that guy to speak out a line and say, like, hey, aren't you doing something wrong?
I mean, we may have found a pet issue. We may have found something that, even though it was not a violation of the NAP, it is so important to Molyneux that he was willing to go in guns blazing, figuratively speaking, because, you know, he forms these very intense, intimate relationships with some of his callers and people in his community, and protecting them is a real issue to him. Like, let's not mince words. Like, this is a community that he has built. This is not strangers over the phone. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I mean, so the community also pays for his work, so he might feel like financially threatened if some of his more lucrative callers end up dropping off because they feel bullied or threatened. Mm-hmm. You know, that could threaten his financial stability too. So I wonder if that's part of it.
So what do you think he could do now to make it right?
I think the best thing anyone can do.
Do you think what he's done is actually an act of aggression? And if so, is there a restitution involved? And if not, do you think what he's done is enough of a reputation snafu that it might be worth him doing some damage control?
So yes, it is an act of aggression to ask an authority to take down other people's private property. The videos, that attack was artfully dodged by a skillful internet user who had a digital copy of the videos and was able to re-release.
I mean, it's the Streisand effect, right?
Yes. Well, but the attack, you know, just because it was dodged, it doesn't make it any less of an attack. So
yeah, that's a good point. Sure.
Just because we don't see the damage really being done, like these videos haven't disappeared, doesn't mean that Stefan hasn't committed an offense by asking they be taken down. Now, the right thing to do in any situation where a person starts to realize that they have made a mistake is to be completely honest and humble and bring forward all the facts and let people judge you as they may, but start being the example. Start being the good example right now. Even though you may have faltered before, just pick up where you are and start being good.
You know what? You know, here's what I think would make everybody feel better is what? If Stefan, first off, agreed to do a show that was not on his channel, but was on the channels and only on the channels, or at least not mirrored by him, of the channels that were taken down. That way his presence gains them traffic and subscribers that they may have lost. Second, that show should be entirely devoted to criticisms of him sort of sitting in the hot seat and really answering the questions that people have about him and his show and his positions and the things that he sort of artfully dodges.
Yes, I love that.
I think that would solve it for me. I'd feel better if that happened.
Put Stefan in the hot seat. I mean, could you imagine if...
I mean, it's almost like throwing tomatoes at a guy in the racks, but it's not quite so terrible.
Well,
but you see what I mean? Like, really, the damage is the loss of the YouTube time, right? And so it could very well be that his fame and his caliber could then restore that loss. It could literally bring viewers to the channels he damaged.
Right. And then those channels could forever be a positive check on him. Like, if he ever does lose his head, lose his principles or anything, he knows that he's got someone vigilantly watching after his every action. I mean, it must be horrifying to know that there's someone, you know, taking notes on every wrong thing you do. But it also is freeing in a way that he knows he's going to have a check on himself And, you know,
what he says would happen in a free market. It is exactly what he says would happen in a free market, is that people would begin to monitor each other, and other actors in the market have an incentive to keep a watch on somebody not getting too big. Well, he's the biggest, most successful philosophy conversation in the world, right?
Yeah.
Well, that means that smaller, little, minuscule philosophy conversations are going to start competing with him and calling him on his stuff.
What I've found most interesting about all this is the way the muggles or the average person is speaking about Stefan now that they're aware of him. You know, this controversy sort of drug him out of obscurity and into the mainstream, or maybe it just sort of happened that way, that he was reaching mainstream by this point. But Anna Kasparian of the Young Turks and the Joe Rogan podcast, talking about him on Anna's show, The Point, she's bringing up what you did about the objection, the way he describes women, or about defooing, or anarchy, how she thinks he wants a world with no laws.
Her description of anarchy is a world with no laws. And he's like, no, that's not what he means at all. So she actually kind of bothers me. And this is another reason why I'm hesitant to like throw all my tomatoes at Molyneux, because it sort of empowers these people who are sort of, you know, philosophically more sloppy than him. But anarchy doesn't mean a world with no laws. It means a world where, you know, the laws are consistent as gravity. So, yeah.
Well, that troubled me that, you know, at the same time when this great philosopher, who I still consider to be a great philosopher, is being dragged down or being dragged through the mud, at the same time there's these mainstream people jumping on the bandwagon and hitting a guy while he's down, and they do it so poorly. I mean, calling out anarchy for being a world with no laws is just sloppy. I wish that. But it's good that the conversation is happening. That's why I bring it up, because it's cool to hear mainstream folks talking about these topics, even if they're way off base. Like, they're on the conversation now.
Yeah,
they're talking about anarchy. They're talking about women's role in a freer future. And because, you know, Stefan does talk about women a lot. He focuses on them, but I appreciate that focus, because there's not enough of a focus on women's role in the troubles of the world. There's a lot of focus on what guys can do. You know, learn to stop raping women, or don't beat your wives. Like, we've been hearing that for 20, 30 years. I mean, what's so wrong about bringing up the point that women share responsibility in raising children, raising psychopaths, marrying men who are alpha males, who may not be the best fathers or husbands? You know, women share responsibility in this.
For sure. And I think that's part of the tragedy, too, is that a lot of what he says, even about these controversial topics, is spot on. But it's like the pendulum swung so far the other way that he loses people, you know?
Right. Well, I hope the baby doesn't get thrown out with the bathwater with this one. He's got a lot of good philosophy, but he's got good stuff. Worms.
You're Worms. Listening to the Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
We're talking about Stefan Molyneux, a internet philosopher who's been hugely influential in my life, and Davi's too, but he's going through a rough patch right now, not following through with his own principles. And on the line, we have someone who can speak to us a little bit about that. Jim Jesus of YouTube channel, youtube.com/Mach1. That's MOCHWON. What's going on, Jim Jesus?
Not much. It's actually MACHWON.
Oh, there you go. Right. There you go.
So, So one of the problems that was pointed out and was that YouTube has this privacy flagging system where if your information is being used or being distributed on the website, you can actually use the flagging system. And YouTube is very liberal about it. In fact, I had a guy who claimed to be a public figure and an activist actually used that against me, and YouTube accepted it anyway. Mm-hmm. There was no reason to believe that this wouldn't have happened as well with the Stefan Molyneux case. And I have seen a mirror of some of those videos where it was doing that thing, but it wasn't coming from the True Shibes channel. It was coming from a user called Free Domain Daemon.
So what's your role
in all
this?
Mirror sites.
And what's going on here?
Well, I was one of the first people to start making videos about and announcing that Stefan Molyneux was doing this. At first, it was just, True Shibes channel was very small. No one was really watching it. My channel was kind of getting a little bit of steam because I was kind of pointing out some problems with some other libertarians, and then even over copyright. And then this happened, and it was like, well, while we're talking about it, let's talk about Stefan Molyneux. And everything just started exploding. Everyone started sharing the video, and now everyone's looking to me for information about this, and I guess.
Okay. So you had a YouTube channel. You were calling out Stefan. For what sort of things? You were calling him out for intellectual property violations, using intellectual property claims against others while not espousing that philosophy in his own life?
Right, because I had problems with the DMCA abuse a while back with one of the members of the Zeitgeist Movement. Mm-hmm. I made videos critical about the Zeitgeist Movement, mm-hmm. and I had some filed on me. So I understood the process, the legal terms, and everything. And I was kind of trying to combat some of the just nonsense that I was getting in return, like YouTube, or that the DMCA is a YouTube policy and whatnot. So I was able to really explain these things a little bit better than, you know, a lot of people who are just kind of jumping into the thing.
So have your videos been taken down?
Not regarding the Stefan Molyneux thing. This is regarding the Zeitgeist Movement.
Right.
That has been taken down, yeah.
Yeah, I know I've had videos on YouTube taken down for claims of bullying, and it's very easy. Anyone can just flag a video. I think if it gets 3 flags or something, then it gets taken down, at least temporarily, while YouTube reviews it, and then YouTube can later make a claim like, oh yeah, sorry, there was no abuse happening, we just took down your video for no reason. Or they can...
It's kind of a presumed guilty until proven innocent system.
Yeah.
Well, actually, what happens with the privacy complaint is if it just gets one complaint, that's all it needs. YouTube reviews it, and if they see that it is a privacy violation, then they take it down. You can then appeal it if you want, and then you get a strike on your channel. If you get 3 strikes on your channel, then your channel goes down. That's how the privacy system works, and that's kind of how the DMCA works, except it's instant. Once you file a DMCA, that information is sent to the courts. The video is taken down, and that's it.
So how did you end up in the middle of all this? Do you have like a connection to True Shibes, or like what made you the focal point of this sort of coverage?
It just happened to be just being at the wrong place at the right time, I guess. I was making videos about some people being hypocrites about copyright to begin with, and then that same day this happened, and everyone was already kind of looking at me already to see what was going on, what I was saying. I just happened to be right there covering it when I found out. So.
Well, I'm glad you're here to cover it now. I want to ask you, when we come back, about your opinions on copyright, how you came to feel so strongly about these positions that you're willing to go out and attack some major philosopher, the largest philosophical conversation in the world. You must have some stones, man. So, yeah, I want to ask you about that when we come back.
Worms.
Worms. We're going to get our philosophy hats on straight.
Meow. Meow, meow, meow.
Have you recently defooed a cult that demands constant devotion to a figurehead? The guy who claims to be anti-IP, but uses IP to silence critics? That charming gentleman who thinks all your problems are from bad parenting? If you're tired of tithing to messiahs who demand a lot of your money, consider donating to the Freedom Fiends. We're more fun and don't require constant praise. In fact, we don't even like audience involvement. We talk, you listen, if you want. And if you send us a dollar, we won't complain. We'll dig it. That's freedomfiends.com.
Worms!
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Worms. This is Michael Dean's Weird Friends, filling in for Michael Dean, who has been whisked away by the mayor of Toronto, Tom Ford, and Stefan Molyneux. He's now smoking crack in a back alley in Canada. But he'll be back tomorrow. He'll be okay. Here with me is Davy Barker, the shiny badger.
Present.
Meow. And we've got Jim Jesus on the line. Meow for me, Jim Jesus.
Meow.
All right. I like that. So we're chatting about Stefan Molyneux. And Jim Jesus, you're close to the issue. How did you get in this mix? Why are you so close to this story?
Well, because I had some strong feelings about IP to begin with. Mm-hmm. And there was another libertarian.
IP being intellectual property. And why are you against that? Let's clear that up first.
I just don't think that it's possible to claim ownership over non-rivalrous material.
Over non-what?
Rivalrous material. It's material that's not scarce.
Okay, so like copying makes two of something, so you're not stealing. Right. You're making more of a thing. Whereas if I were to steal your bicycle and just take it, now you're out of bicycle. So it's not... but intellectual property doesn't work that way. I could just make a billion copies of Davi's book, and I'm not taking anything from Davi.
Right.
Okay. I follow.
That would be okay with me.
Thanks, Davi.
And there was another libertarian who professed to also stake my position on IP, who was running a software company. Who had a very strong end user license agreement, which prohibited all kinds of stuff, and it stated it's intellectual property. And I thought that was a little bit hypocritical. And as I was pointing that out, and people were kind of already kind of looking at my channel, not many people, but some. This whole kind of thing broke, and the True Shibes channel was a very small channel. There was not many people on it at all. And,
how small are we talking here? Like 20 subscribers or 200?
I could not tell you. I'm thinking maybe in the 200 range. Okay. I mean, and that's being liberal.
Yeah.
Well, they're put on the map now.
Yeah.
On his Facebook, it was something like maybe 50 some odd likes. So it really wasn't uber popular.
Wow. Now, was this just a troll? Is this just someone who's like, I hate whoever the popular guy is, and I'm just going to attack them whenever they say something wrong? Because inevitably, with 3,000 videos that are all like 3 hours long, he's going to say something wrong. He's going to mess up. So, is that what this is about? Just some troll picking on a popular guy?
No, it really did seem like there was a lot of stuff in those videos that were not just something that someone would just stupidly say.
Like what?
There were things that it felt like that was a strong opinion about defooing, about his wife's reprimand, just hate against women, and
that's something we haven't talked about yet. His wife's reprimand. What is that?
Okay, so a couple years ago, his wife used to have a show on his channel called Ask a Therapist, and before this happened, she did a podcast with him, where she was kind of stating that she had some concerns about doing it. that it was an ethical violation to recommend defooing as prescribed by Stefan Molyneux, and to do it over the air live. And, you know, he berated her and stuff like that. And he ended up breaking her down and getting her to do it on a podcast. And then she started doing this on the podcast.
Getting her to do it is manipulative. That's I don't know. The language is iffy. She's her own agent. She chose to do the podcast.
Of course. But it did seem like he was really kind of like nailing her, you know, verbally to doing it. And
I used to listen to his show back when this was fresh, and there was sort of pressure. Like, he had this fantasy of being a duo on the show, and she was always sort of reluctant, and, you know, she won out, right? But I'm sure there was some pressure and some discussion in the background that wasn't over the air. But as I understand it, it's that was recommending that, like, something that needs to happen in a therapeutic environment, not over a radio show, if that makes sense.
And I'm not saying, like, you know, he tied her down and forced her to do anything. But, you know, it did seem like he was putting an awful lot of pressure on her to doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And she was doing her thing on the Ask a Therapist podcast in the Ontario Board of Colleges. I can't remember what they call it. College of Therapists did an investigation. And basically saying that DFU wasn't a practice that was ethically okay it's okay to disconnect from abusive families, but the definition of abuse they were really not okay with.
Okay, how do you feel about that? We got to talk about that, whether or not it's ethical to DFU and whether or not we consider what some families do abuse.
I challenge any organization that says you shouldn't disconnect from your family because they're family. I would challenge anyone who says that. The problem is when he defines abuse as anyone who supports the state in an abstract.
There you go.
So if anyone's a small government libertarian, you know, they're using force on you by proxy, by voting for people who take taxes from you.
Yeah.
And they're abusing you through a gun, and you need to cut them off from your life. And there's a podcast or a video on his channel called, I think it's Ron Paul 3. And if you look it up, Steph bought Ron Paul 3, you can find the video. And he actually lays out a case. You lay out a case for the against me argument.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If they don't, cut them out, because what they're saying is, I'm going to shoot you.
Yeah, you know, I have because here's the thing. That sounds really philosophically solid to me. Like, if you invite someone out for a cup of coffee and you sit across a table and you say, hey, do you want me shot for taking this political position? And they say yes, which never happens, but they say that it does. I mean, that's a hot moment in a relationship. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like,
have you ever had that conversation, Davi?
I have defriended people on Facebook having this conversation. I haven't excommunicated personal friends or family.
I've done it. It was a good decision.
Yeah.
Having the conversation about, like, hey, do you support violence? Like, let's get real about this, because I'm a person who goes to jail for violating laws, and if you support that, I can't be your friend. So, right. You know, that's how it's going to be. What about you? Have you ever defooed or defriended over these types of conversations, Jim Jesus?
No, actually, I've had conversations, and I used to be a big fan of the against me argument, but now I'm a little bit more consequential in my argumentation. But there was one person who just said yes, but he said, but hear me out. And he actually provided an explanation, and I didn't think that it was, I don't recall it, because this was 2007, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
So this was a while ago.
So was the violence against you justified?
It wasn't that he justified the violence. He was making the case that it wasn't a direct threat of force of violence, but it was something that everyone should accept as a social contract. And I don't think that it's valid, but I don't think that that's something I want to, like, get rid of, you know, tell my mom to screw off because you're going to vote for Hillary.
So what does this mean for Stefan? Were you a follower of his, at least one of his internet followers, followed his videos, followed his philosophy? Are you soured?
I was watching his YouTube channel, and I was hearing all these allegations of occults and, you know, destroying families and stuff. And I've have a history of being against cults and reading up on cult mind control and stuff like that. And I was like, this is interesting. And I looked it up and I was like, oh, it's just crap. And I used to go out and defend Stefan and say, no, this is not true. You know, I know about cults and, you know, and the more people started, you know, talking to me, the more I started finding these episodes of stuff where he's just saying, like, just really just red flag stuff. And I started finding out about Defu, and I just had to basically cut my ties with the guy and be critical. But I wasn't really very vocal about it. I was just kind of like, oh, I'm not interested in Stefan Molyneux.
Were you in Stefan's inner circle?
Oh, no.
Okay. That's another one of those cult things, right?
Yeah, there's like three different types of Stefan Molyneux fans. There was people like me who just subscribed to YouTube, maybe listened to a few podcasts, didn't really get into the whole defooing thing, never really got into the MRA thing or anything like that. I just kind of was just...
MRA thing?
Men's rights advocates.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
That's the whole stuff where everybody's getting flack about me massages, even from MRAs.
Mm-hmm.
Which is weird.
You know, I haven't brought this up before, but I was a paid subscriber to Free Domain Radio, and I was in the members only section for a while, and I've gone through the entire podcast list twice. And so, I mean, I was pretty deep into it, but I was never a true believer, right? Like, I never drank the Kool-Aid. I just found it all very valuable to me.
Yeah, he does do a lot of stuff I find valuable, too. So
are you sour, Davi?
You know, I don't point people his direction anymore, but I do still sort of find the philosophy of some of his books to be really valuable. It's part of my thought process. I find his philosophical arguments very sound. It's still part of my thought process.
So if that's what he did the best, shouldn't he just go back to that and, like, pedal back, stop doing what he's doing now with all this mainstream attention? Or is it just this was already in the cards? This was going to come out eventually anyway, and he should just keep doing what he's doing?
I don't want to tell him what he should do.
Well, I don't know. I want him to make the best decision for him and for everyone. I still like
so
the guy.
So this is a consequentialist argument, but this is one that Stefan Molyneux makes. He had a video about Trayvon Martin, and it was incredibly controversial, but it got millions of hits from people who'd never heard of his show before. Yeah. And encapsulated in that video was commentary and sort of statistical data on domestic abuse and child abuse in African American families. And yes, he said that regardless of how consequent or how controversial that video was, that got millions of people who were never going to encounter that information again in any other way to see a presentation on the effect of child abuse in these families, where it's very common. And that is a consequentialist argument, but, you know, there it is. And I think that he's right, that if it gets into new ears, that's valuable in a way.
When you say it's a consequentialist argument, as opposed to what?
You know, I don't know that he's right about Trayvon Martin. He sides with the police in a way that I'm not very comfortable with, but I don't know all the facts about that particular case, if that makes sense.
Mm, okay, yeah. So he
Although,
just...
you know, in the case of Trayvon Martin, it wasn't police, but in this more recent one, Michael Brown, I think he sides with the police.
So do you continue to make YouTube videos about this topic, Jim Jesus?
Yeah, I do.
And what's your next one focusing on, or what was your latest one?
It just really call whatever falls in my lap, whatever kind of news bit comes my way, then I'll make something if I feel that something needs to be said about it.
Cool. Well, I'm looking forward to checking out your YouTube channel, Jim Jesus. It's Mach 1 on YouTube. We'll be back with more bad philosophy on the Freedom Fiends.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Hi, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. The internet has lowered the cost barrier for a worldwide radio show to a price approaching zero. Yet there is one arena where you still need thousands of dollars to approach the audio quality of the corporate media. Doing a live spoken show with more than one host in different geographic locations. Our program, Fiend Phone, will solve that problem, and it will be given away free. Go to fiendphone.com to see what you can do to help. That's FEENPHONE.com.
Freedom Fiends, tasing you with liberty. Oh, welcome back, everybody. You must be weird if you're up this late listening to these weirdos. So, we're soothing your brain, calming the hamster, talking about bad philosophy, and righting the wrongs of the world, one podcast at a time. Still joined by Jim Jesus of the YouTube channel Mach 1. He's explaining what went wrong with Stefan, where this train wreck started. And Dobby's going to help us write it, because he's got some solutions for Stefan. Earlier, Dobby, you said that you would appreciate a video by Stefan on Trushaib's channel, sitting in the hot seat and taking criticism from the public. What do you think about this
just
solution?
Just answering questions is what I want people to have an opportunity to act like. Because here's the thing.
He does
you have a
call-in
home team
show.
Advantage.
He already
no,
does.
No, but he has a home team advantage on his call-in show.
No, he like, says criticisms go right to the front of the line. So even though he's booked
right,
out to November, you can call into his call-in show, make a criticism, and be first on the air.
But then again, but I was also banned from the forum for politely asking why the DMCA took place.
So what? So you can't call in?
I don't know, but I was banned from the forum. I was also banned from them on Facebook, too, both of them. And I didn't even contact them.
It's private property. If you call into his show, he gets to decide when you're cut off, and then he gets to have the last word. I'm saying he needs to submit to not having the home team advantage so that people can ask him their questions until they're satisfied, and it needs to not be on his channel so that he is using his position to drive traffic to the channels he's harmed.
Jim Jesus, what would you ask Stefan if you had the opportunity?
I just want to know how this all plays in with his universally preferable behavior and his ethics. Because for him to buy into his ethics,
universally preferable? If people feel that Molyneux's people are harassing someone, should somebody take down Molyneux's channel?
Well, no, this is I mean, from a philosophical standpoint, someone pointed this out, I think it was Philosophy Lines, is that he made this discussion showing that you can reject an ethical philosophy if the philosopher violates his own philosophy and it doesn't fall into ad hom or tu quoque. And this
ad
is
hom,
a violation of his ethics.
Being a personal attack against someone, and tu quoque meaning?
You too.
So what is that?
It's kind of like, well, you did something bad too. It's a logical fallacy.
Okay, so it's saying like someone's personal character doesn't have a bearing on their philosophy, or
no, what? That it does.
Oh, that it does. Okay,
if a philosopher violates his own standard of ethics, then that ethics can be roundly rejected.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. You know, if they're not living by it, then who am I to follow what they don't live by?
I don't know if that's true. I mean, it might be a way to sort of shorthand who you're going to take seriously. But I mean, like, I believe in the non-aggression principle. If somebody who espouses the non-aggression principle violates the non-aggression principle, I don't suddenly say, oh, well, I guess it's out the window.
Right. I agree, too. I don't think it was a very sound position, but that was his position, which would make it self-detonating.
Okay.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You're saying this is his position. Well, right. Then, that's totally wrong.
Yeah.
It's not my position.
It's called the fallacy fallacy, actually.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I agree.
So is Stefan the Plato or Socrates of our day? Is that a fair characterization as being maybe not on the same level philosophically, but also maybe, but I mean in fame. Like, he's the philosopher, right? Is there someone higher than him or bigger than him that's better known or... someone I'm leaving out? It seems to me he's like the guy.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. I don't really follow philosophy that well, so.
Yeah, that's true.
He's sort of like he's in our echo chamber, though.
But he claims to be the largest philosophical conversation in the world.
Well, that's because there isn't. I mean, that's sort of a small niche sort of category, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know any other show that pitches itself as a philosophy conversation?
Well, no, but that's why I'm saying he is sort of the Socrates of our time, and it's really cool. Like, I'm sure if Socrates or Plato could, had access to the internet, people would be ripping him apart all the time, saying, "Oh, you don't live up to your principles here, or you don't follow that rule." So, is any philosopher immune from that fallacy that Jim Jesus just brought up, like living by your own principles. And aren't we all going to make mistakes?
Yeah. I mean, this is, again, the sort of the great man theory of history. You're like, I don't believe in the great man. And so I don't expect anybody to be infallible.
Hmm. Yeah, well, it seems like he's messed up or at least stepped in some hot water. Hopefully the damage is repairable. Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Welcome, Freedom Fiends. We return to talk more bad philosophy. Although we lost Jim Jesus, it was good chatting with him for a little while. His YouTube channel is Mach 1, MachOn. Very cool guy, and seems to be close to the Stefan fiasco. So I'll be following his channel as we watch the rest unfold. Dobby's still here with me, though.
I'm still here. Shiny Badger at your service.
Hello, this is the Warrant Canary. And I have a confession, Davi. I'm a little nervous to spill the beans on this, but I recently did something tyrannical. And it goes against my internal...
Did you get a YouTube video shut down for intellectual property violation?
That's it. You guessed it. Carrier pigeon, spill the beans on me. No, the reality is, so I live in sort of a libertarian paradise. I live in what I would view as the closest thing to the free future that I can get, which is in Keene, New Hampshire, where there's a freedom project of activists who are moving to the same geographic area so that they can build a place where we can have true liberty in our lifetimes. And that's the goal. That's the project. That's what we're working on. That's what I'm here for. And there are some others here working on that as well. And so there's a place called the Keene Activism Center where I live very close by. And while I was away from Keene, a new system had developed where new members could be added to this activism center and removed basically on philosophy. Like, hey, do you abide by the non-aggression principle? The idea that you own yourself and you can't commit acts of force or fraud against anyone. And that was sort of the litmus test of like, should this person be a member or not? Mm-hmm. And over time, while I was away and everything, when I came back, I saw that there was this new system that had developed, I guess, by consensus, where the members said, hey, you know, we should talk about adding a new member first, you know, leave it open to discussion for the current members, let anyone bring forward any grievances or any objections and perhaps block that proposal of a new member, and give it some time, basically, so that a person could be vetted. And if there is a block, give a person an opportunity to have like mediation or something, you know, so that it could grow organically. The community could self-police, not have too strict of rules, but let it be open to discussion and consensus. So
that
I like
okay
this.
To me.
Yeah, I like this. I think this is sort of a way that private clubs could behave in a free society absent the government. And so
I mean, because here's the thing, you're not building a communist free society, right? You're building a proprietarian, you know, free society where people have, you know, the right to set rules on their property, right? So
right.
It doesn't have to be an anything goes environment. It can be a what do the property owners want on their property environment. And if that means sort of catering to the community they're building there, I don't see a problem with that.
I agree. And so far, it seems to have worked pretty well. The community here is very active. Keene is still the Liberty Media capital of the world. Cop blocking, which is like filming the police, happens on a regular basis. It's a great place to store cards for Robin Hooding, which is feeding people's parking meters to prevent them getting tickets. There's a lot of activism that happens here, no doubt. But my problem revolves around the fact that I've now used the system, the activist vetting system, to try and get someone removed from the membership roles for non-philosophical reasons. And this really burns me up inside, because I feel like almost like a I don't know.
No, wait a minute. What do you mean?
Well, I mean that I proposed to the group that two members be removed as members, because basically their behavior had gotten to an unbearable level for me. So it's not like that we disagree philosophically, or that these people are like violating the non-aggression principle. It's that they're trashing the place and becoming more trouble than they're worth. Like, as a good member of an organization, you want to bring something to the table, right? And always leave things better than you found them, so that the community can grow and thrive. But if some people are contributing and others are taking, well, that's a dangerous situation. You know, we should know about that. We should have advance warning as
well. Proletarians. I mean, are there house rules against trashing the place?
Yeah. So, like, there are rules against cleaning.
Well, then
up.
You are talking about aggression.
Okay. Well, yeah. Good point. So. Yeah, okay. I guess that is considered aggression against all.
I mean, I don't know how big the mess is. It's not threatening somebody with a pistol or something. But if you come onto my property and make a mess, and I've asked you not to do that, I would ask you to leave.
Yeah, so I guess that's where it's coming from. And I feel like one of the only voices who's willing to speak up. And so that's one of the important things about a self-policing libertarian paradise society, is that it demands the courage to have uncomfortable conversations. And if you're not willing to do that, then we can't have a free society. That's what I feel.
Okay.
We need, you know, this is a part of the process that's a little uncomfortable, and it feels so bureaucratic, right, to propose that someone be banned or removed. Like, I don't have any beef with these individuals personally. I think that's what gives me the trouble, that these people, let's call them Jack and Jill, because it's a guy and a girl.
Okay.
I did a podcast with Jack earlier today after proposing his removal. It's not like I hate this person or you know, one.
And he
bad
knows
thing.
This, so he's internalized this too. You guys are still friends?
Yes.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, that actually, it does give me a lot of hope that in a free society, like, people can work out their differences if they have the courage to speak out about it. So I'm encouraged. This is still ongoing, but I'm catching a lot of criticism from those who I'd say are just unwilling to speak up about messes. Because, you know, maybe I'm just being uppity here, but I believe as anarchist libertarians, we've got enough working against us that we should be setting the example for others to follow in everything that we can do, but in cleanliness, in presentation, in speaking, in behavior, in all manners of life. We should be setting the standard, showing others the best ways to live, you know, and living by example. So if a community like the Keene Activism Center, which I set in my mind is like the shining example of liberty that I want others to see and say, wow, we could be like that. When I see it getting trashed, I have a problem with that, and I try and remove the problem. And now I'm sort of being villainized for that, because it's not a philosophical, like, aggression principle. But you're saying they have committed a non-aggression principle violation.
If the rules are clearly stated that they're supposed to take out their own trash or whatever the mess is about, and they're not abiding by those rules, then yeah, I mean, you might take it up with the property owner, as opposed, I mean, you're a tenant, as I understand it, right? So you're
That's
paying
correct.
Some rent. You have sort of a stake in the appearance of the house.
Yeah.
To
well,
some
maybe,
extent, sure.
So maybe I've done something wrong. I want to make sure that I'm in the right here. And if I'm in the wrong, I want to be corrected. But maybe I should have gone to the property manager first, because there is sort of a manager of the Keene Activism Center who does take the first level of responsibility, right? So if I see a mess, I guess I would need to speak with them. Although I'm perfectly willing to jump over over a leader or over some authority figure and go right to the source of the problem.
Well, who set up this system of banning people? Was that set up by the property owner?
No, it was set up, I guess,
that's interesting.
I guess it was set up by consensus at some point in the past while I was away. So when I came back, I saw, like, there's this new system, and it's been used to keep people out, to ban certain people, and to keep levels of restriction on the private club.
Okay.
Which is so what would happen in LibPair.
Something that jumps out to me is that, I mean, even though we're talking about property and we're talking about a sort of like libertarian environment. The tragedy of the commons is a real economic phenomenon, and it would happen even in a stateless environment. When people create commons, people misuse those commons because of the incentives that exist, right? So if a person can leave a mess and it's cleaned up by someone else, that creates an incentive in the common areas to leave a mess, if that makes
right.
sense.
Yes, and that is what's been happening. And I think that's part of the reason why I don't want to go to the manager and be like, hey, clean up more. It's like, no, people shouldn't be leaving messes for you to clean up.
Sure.
So, I don't know. I think that's just where I'm at. And I, you know, am I wrong here? I would be perfectly willing to accept both of these members back if some sort of behavior changed. But at this point, you know, I feel like I've spoken to them each individually about messes and presentation and stuff like that, and it's been disregarded. So, you know, this is not going to pass, and I'm sort of aware of that. So the way the system works is similar to Occupy, that you can propose a removal, and then other people have to, like, sign on to that or disagree with it. So, like, two people have endorsed it, saying, like, yeah, I would agree with a removal of these people. But then two other have jumped up and blocked. So for each block, I now need to get two more votes to overcome those blocks. And each block adds like a week of consideration, and now we're going to be in mediation, which I think is a great solution. Like, so first, before anyone could be removed, the person who proposes a removal has to go into mediation or could go into mediation with the people they want to remove, which is a great solution, I think. You know, it's a last resort. Let's talk this out before things turn into.
So this is really interesting to me, and one of the reasons that I'm especially excited about New Hampshire over other sort of libertarian enclaves that exist is because if you wade all the way into the weeds of all the different kinds of libertarians and anarchists that exist, what I am is a critarchist, and
what is critarchist, that?
So crit comes from credo. It's Greek. It means justice. And what it means is that the kind of dispute resolution that I believe in is not a philosophical dispute resolution. It's a customary dispute resolution. When disputes erupt between people and they go to an arbiter, that arbiter should sort of decide based on the normative behavior and the normative values and customs of the surrounding society, because the edges of philosophy are always muddy, but they're sort of decided by custom. And so you guys are really doing that. You're not just saying like there's an aggression problem. You're saying like there's a customary problem. There's tension between people at a social level.
Worms.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing. Buttons! Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Women, anarchism, atheism.
You know, something funny about defooing, like foo stands for family of origin, right?
Yes.
And a lot of people think that Stefan Molyneux came up with this term, but he actually didn't. It's sort of an industry term. And before using the term foo, he used the word ABC.
What does that
mean? And it stands for accidental biological cage.
Oh, wow.
Which I always thought was sort of interesting because you call them biological prisoners.
Yes.
So, you know, it's sort of maybe that's a more philosophically accurate term. I don't know. But
I don't know if it is because, like, I don't know. Yeah, I guess children aren't so free to leave. But would they even choose to? Hopefully people are all parenting so well that all children across the world would just choose to be in whatever home they're currently in.
You know, I think of it kind of like in V for Vendetta, when he had Natalie Portman in the cage and there's the guard and everything. And then she sort of opens the cage door and walks away and the guard is fake. Right.
Ooh.
Like, I think that to some extent, if your friend, not all families are cages, but if your family is a cage, it's a cage without a guard.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the extent of it.
Yeah. I used to have a phrase that was above the door in the house where I grew up, and it put enough scare into me that I never did try and run away. The phrase was, to know how sweet your home may be, just run away, but keep the key. I always remembered that, like, maybe if I was really mad at my parents, like, I'm running away. But I never did, probably because that saying told me, like,
I did. I ran away.
Really? How old?
Yeah,
were
when
you?
I was 17 years old.
Oh, well, when you're 17, you're not running away. Please, you're an adult. You're a man.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, my mother
walked
and I
away.
Had, I had a falling out with them over a curfew that I thought was, not reasonable.
A curfew at 17?
Yeah.
Old enough to be married and, like, possibly join the army, but your parents mm-hmm. are still telling you when to go to bed? No.
But you know what? It did change, and this is sort of one of the reasons why I think there's some merit to Stefan Molyneux's stuff. It changed our relationship because I asserted that the relationship was voluntary.
Yes.
And that changed everything. And we've had a much better relationship since then.
That's something I needed to learn as an adult child, like as an adult of my parents. I still have a relationship with them, and now it's voluntary, whereas before it wasn't. And I needed to sort of make a new relationship. It was like making a new friend, like an older friend. And I needed to re-meet my parents, like, as human beings that I would, like, meet on the street. Like, oh, you're kind of cool, you're into fishing or whatever you're into, you know, like, these are your interests, and I have to sort of re-meet them as adults. Like, I'm this adult and this is who I am, and we have these things in common. It's not just like we're gonna be de facto friends now because we shared a house for 20 years.
Yeah. And, you know, my parents were really cool. I mean, there was some rocky spots when I was a teenager, but, you know, I'm very grateful for the way I was brought up, and I credit them a lot to the way that I look at the world now.
Yeah. And, well, you got the idea to keep your relationship on a voluntary basis somewhere. I imagine it was from them. Was it?
Oh, well, I don't know that. I mean, I think to some extent listening to Freedom Main Radio gave me that vocabulary. At the time, it was just sort of, I just didn't know what else to do. I was acting out and I had to get away.
See.
But, you know, in hindsight, the reason that our relationship has been better since then is because I was de facto saying, hey, I can leave. So,
speaking of voluntary relationships, we were just talking about the Keene Activism Center and how there's sort of this consensus building exercise every Saturday where the members get together and talk about who might want to be proposed as a new member or who might want to be removed. And this is an exercise in voluntary association. There was one individual who said he was going to leave if another guy became a member. You know, he wasn't going to put up a block. He was just going to leave. That was another exercise in free association. So there's lots of great ways to change the world by choosing who you associate with.
I think it's great. It sets an example, and you know, people are free to leave. That's the way clubs are. So, you know,
that's how it will be.
It'll work itself out.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you'll join us here one day, Davi. Hopefully the whole world will join us in New Hampshire.
Everyone will move to New Hampshire. The whole world. Hamster.
Well, I hope we've calmed the hamster in your brain tonight.
Yeah, I think we've solved all the world's problems.
Good night of achieving all the philosophy this world can handle.
Thank you for your service, Derek.
Thank you, Davi. Or shall I call you the Shiny Badger?
Only if I can call you the Warren Canary.
Meow.